What are we doing? I'm fucking tired.
Hey, that's good.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. And I always forget when I put my headphones on for the stream how loud that intro is when you've not got it coming out of your speakers at like a manageable room volume, but you got it cranked and you just go bam. It ends up being a little bit like the drill tweet where he's like, I'm not owned, I scream as I shrink down and turn into a little corn cob. That's kind of what I felt like then. So, you're looking tired there, man. What's up?
7 a.m. is becoming more and more inconvenient for this podcast.
Do you want to go to 6? May I move it up a little bit?
Yeah, we could just get you up a little bit earlier. I'm sure your wee one can help with that as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because I get up a lot in the middle of the night, and then to get up early as well when it's not necessary is kind of fucking annoying.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Yeah, so, but you know, other than that, mate, I'm fighting, I'm great. It's also pissing with rain. I was a little bit late here because I was sort of looking at my pool, wondering whether I should go and fucking, I don't know, open the knob or some shit. I've never had a pool before, so.
Is it overflowing or something?
It is brimming, yeah. It's been pissing with rain. And I was like, if it goes over, where's it going to go? The lawn? Is that bad for the lawn? Probably. I don't know. Yeah. It's probably half fresh water by now anyway. So.
Is it above your house or below your house?
Oh, no. It's fucking right down the back.
Don't those things have some sort of automatic way of doing that or no? I thought there was like an overflow in the pump structure or something that would like
say there is a bung like right up near the top, I have it closed because when I fill it up from the tap, I like to fill it up more than it likes to be filled up, which now I filled it up a couple of days ago and now it's pissing rain. Maybe I should look at the weather forecast before I fill it up.
Anyway. Oh, that's a good idea.
These are real bull market problems you got now. It must be good times over there at Big Bulls Blockchain Towers.
Well, the thing is, in Brisbane, I don't think you can buy a house without a pool.
Oh, really?
Must be like fucking mandated or something. There's like, when we were looking for houses, we looked at a lot of houses and not one of them didn't have a pool. So
we're going to need a fact check on that from our Australian fact checker, Rama.
You get on Google Maps and look, man, and it's just fucking blue dots everywhere. Even the plebs have got pools around here.
Do you find yourself using it or is it just being ignored?
Hey?
Do you use it a lot or no? Is
it never swam in it.
Yeah.
The only time I went in there was to get the fucking leaves out.
Yeah.
So far, it's cost me a lot of money and I haven't used it.
It's amazing. Well, I guess it's starting to warm up too, right? It's starting to get to pool weather. Probably wasn't pool weather at all.
I think it's like benefit would be when we have family over and stuff and friends with kids.
And you got any music out there and everything? Is it rocking?
Do we have music?
Yeah, like out there. Like, do you have speakers out there? You got like a little.
No, but since the advent of the Bluetooth speaker, I feel like we could make it happen. Yeah.
You can make it happen.
It's kind of like semi-permanent audiophile setup that Sir's got on his head.
Yeah.
I kind of want to put the ceiling speakers through the house, but it seems like an unnecessary expense. Might have to wait a few years for that.
Well,
to come back.
Then. Yeah, right. You got to wait a little bit.
Bam.
Wait for my Wah-Wah to become valuable.
That router protocol is going to start turning into real dollars any second.
Oh, any minute now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we just did our backyard. And so I put like wall speakers in. I have some stuff in the way on the other side that's like started out there. I have wires everywhere. It's coming to an amp. Like, I have a Raspberry Pi driving it because I use this thing here. I can move in multiple, like, different, what do you call it? Like, you know, like different regions you can have stuff in upstairs, also be in the outside and like all that shit, which is great. Right. I love it. And somebody's like, why don't you just get a Bluetooth speaker? I was like, oh yeah. why did I do all this fucking work when I could just literally just taken a small Bluetooth speaker with me and brought it outside?
I mean, this is literally cloud versus colo, isn't it?
No, That's all age. That's all age. It's like, oh yeah, I need music outside. Of course I need a, $1,000 worth of fucking speakers outside and running 12 gauge wire everywhere. Well, that's what you do.
So we have like this intercom, right? But it's like a fucking boomer intercom. It's like, you know, the screen's kind of fadey and the fucking, you know, the sound.
I was imagining like a Bakelite field telephone, you know, like from an old war film.
It basically is. Because, you know, we're on a battle axe block, right? So there's two gates up to the front gate, and like the delivery man comes and he's like, oh, locked gate, motherfucking fucks off. And when people do ring the thing, you're like, it's hard to talk to them because they like fucking.
Yeah. Right. Does it have like an old school, you have to hold a button to talk and everything? Like, is it one of those?
No, you don't have to hold the button, but like, I can't hear what they're saying. And and so I'm just like, well, maybe they do have to hold a button. There's only one button. So I don't know. I feel like then I'd be going, hold the button. You know?
That's what.
I do desperately want to fuck it off because I'm sick of going to the post office to get packages. Because they look at the thing and go, fuck off.
Because they have to, you have to let them in the gate. Is that what it is?
Like, yeah, because they won't just leave them out the front.
Do they have like those package boxes by you? We're seeing those like show up a little bit more.
Yeah, they do, but they're still like, I might as well go to the post office, you know?
Oh, I thought you just stick it outside the gate and then just shove it into a something that locks.
Yeah, I feel like I could bolt something to the post that the gate's attached. Anyway, I'm not going to do that.
This is complicated stuff.
Anyway, I want to get, where this was going was, I want to get one of those, you know, like Ring doorbells or like decent one.
Yeah.
I think Ubiquiti have some, but you like a lot of them use PoE, and the cable up there at the moment is an Ethernet cable, but it's only sort of using that for the power, and then the, you know, it's using individual wires out of it for this fucking intercom. It doesn't use it as a normal PoE device. And it's broken somewhere along the way and joined together with, like, I don't know, fucking duct tape. So I need to get a bunch of data cables run, but that thing is right up the front of the house and it fucking snakes through so much shit.
Is it buried or is it a conduit? You don't know. It's just out there.
It's like in a conduit somewhere, I presume. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, that's my problem at the moment. So
just fucking do it.
Yeah.
Start pulling on cables and shit.
Yeah. Getting it through, I don't understand how they
just do like in a cartoon where you pull it up and it comes up out the ground and then like somebody's house falls over in the background.
Yeah, like China pulls in from the underside. Yeah. I want to get like some data cabling in the house for the Wi-Fi points and for the office and that type of stuff. But I have walked around this thing, man. I have no idea how anyone would get between the levels. Wire in there? I don't know.
There might be a riser somewhere too. Like all of our stuff kind of goes into a couple different places that go up, but
does it?
Might like find a, yeah, you might find something, or there's like one wall that there's been cavied out or cavity. That might have a, you know, that might follow electricity or it might follow something else in there. Or sometimes honestly, if it's just PoE, just get a plenum. There's like plenum, and there's also riser cables. Riser are the ones that are more fire resistant because they go vertically. Plenum are meant to go horizontally. And you can get plenum Ethernet cables, and you can just stick them in your HVAC. Like that's totally allowed. And like a return. So usually returns come like from upstairs, and you might have a return that's at the base of a floor, and you can bring that downstairs and bring it like into your utility room, and just cut hole in the metal and just snake it through and bring it in. But if it has to be a plenum cable, but you can do that. That's totally fine to do. So there's some options there if you want to.
I feel like your HVAC works different to ours.
Why?
We like our heat exchanger is actually in the cavity itself.
Anyway. Oh yeah, you guys probably use mini splits, right?
It's not a mini split, but they are, the system is split. Like you got the condenser outside, the heat exchanger is like in the roof somewhere in the ceiling.
Oh, okay. That's different than it. Yeah. Yeah. We have condenser outside and then heat exchanger is actually in the unit. And then there's a feed and a return, right? Because the return gets pulled from multiple places and there's a feed, obviously, that goes out to registers.
Fuck, man. That sounds horrible.
Well, it doesn't work as well.
But you guys usually have like a drop into the basement or some shit, don't you?
Yeah. Or wherever those things are, right? Like we have, like the return for an hour goes everywhere. Like it picks up from like three different rooms or four different rooms. And then there's, obviously there's a feed that goes everywhere in the house. Like every room has, like if I'm above me, right? It just goes there. So you can use those a little bit here and there.
I think you guys do it different because it's fucking cold as shit over there.
Yeah.
That
could be. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have just like an outdoor unit with gas lines that come into the ceiling with the refrigerant in the gas. Yeah. It goes to the exchanger in the ceiling. And then basically we only have one return because we're usually using AC and it just to get it to go all through the house. It drops it out in the rooms and then sucks it all back to a central point in the house.
Yeah.
So it spreads the, you know, makes the house uniform. So there's only one return straight into the unit.
Got it.
Anyway,
well, he might be able,
I mean, frothing on this fucking conversation.
Well, his house is built out of like mud and sticks and shit, like in the 1400s. So, what's air conditioning?
My house is an Edwardian, a sensible, boring Edwardian house. It's only 100 years old.
It's
only 100 square feet too.
Still the new house on the street.
Yeah, when you're like, when you guys are talking about like, oh yeah, you got to go down the bottom of the whatever, and you're just like, yeah, this is where this country's a little bit more densely packed than that. You're like, I don't know. Well, I guess the thing is like when you live within, I don't know, striking distance of any big city, like there's just not really any space. But I suppose if you were like in the arse end, yeah, sure, you could have a big garden. But
yeah.
It's just the food sucks, man. Like,
have you ever thought of cooking at home? Like,
well, no, it's like your lunch break or whatever. Like, so if you're like in the arse end and you just have an office in the arse end or you go to work somewhere in the arse end, like, you're basically going to get a pie for lunch. And I like pie, but I can't do that every day. I got to have like different lunch options. So being near a city where I'm like half an hour away from like any cuisine I can really think of.
Is this episode 129? It is.
Okay. Yeah.
Agenda items, news items.
So we got some,
has Rama quit? I mean, we haven't paid him in a while.
There's stuff in there.
Have we not paid him?
Not for a while, no.
There's money in the Dow.
Yeah, I know. I'm lazy now that I have a baby. I just prioritize doing things that I like. Paying people isn't one of them.
Got the ledger here all ready to pay. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying.
Can't believe you have a ledger for that fucking Dow. You crumb.
It's not the only thing that's on that ledger, but it is. Wait, it is the only thing that's on that ledger because Core One doesn't exist anymore.
Rama, how long has it been since we've paid you? He's in the comments for those.
He's like,
what? You pay me? Where's that been going? It's been going to secret Null fucking treasury.
Yeah, that's why Null's got a swimming pool. He's been dipping into the pension pots.
I got a bucket full of water. I wouldn't swim in it though. Fucking, I don't know what that water quality's like.
Tough times.
Yeah, we have a lot of shit to talk about. I had outages this week. We talked about that. We have what else? We have obviously some news items.
Obviously, I'm Satoshi. That's now come out.
It's come out. It's finally.
It's inevitably going to come out at some.
I think
point.
We're all Satoshi at heart.
I'm Satoshi, and yeah, the big one actually, which I note is in the news. Thank you, Rama. Is, you know, the informal thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's quite newsworthy.
Why don't you tell us what it is?
Tell us what it is. Yeah, right. Okay. All right. Okay, maybe I will. So.
Because the audience can't read the fucking spreadsheet.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of how radio works now. I was just tutting to myself because I like the spicy tone of voice that Rama has adopted in his phrasing. So Informal announces it would no longer plunder the Atom community pool for salaries in 2025, announcing it's completed all development required for the future of the hub in 2024 with Forge and Hydro. Now the team will be supporting the new team, bracket S, Coming into Gnaw on the Remains. So I mean that is one take, but I don't know, have you read the Jay Trambach tweet about this? I mean the informal post is a little bit tag your it in tone. So I mean, given that Rama is more facetious and also not being paid for that work on the hub, you can easily see why somebody would interpret that post as, yeah, let some other folks have a chew if they want to, basically.
It's like after your dog's like taken off the most of the meat from the knuckle, and there's just like, you know, slobber and sinew left on there, and then like the other dog that's a little bit more fucking raggedy looking, you know, slinkers up when the other dog goes to take a shit in the corner and then like licks it.
I think that's basically where we are with the Cosmos Hub would be my.
Yeah. The bone is the Cosmos Hub.
So yes.
In this analogy, it's not.
So yeah, you're just like, I mean, that, like, my takeaway from it was they were basically like, okay, what we did, like, they kind of say something about like, oh, for an organization like us, we didn't realize how much community work could be involved. And it's like, well, you know, there's money coming from a community pool. Of course, you're going to get a bunch of rage and degens. That's literally the ecosystem you're in. It's the ecosystem that you guys helped kickstart. How are you not aware of this, how it works by now? But that's fine. Whatever, man. Like, also totally cool. But they're like, you know, we only have this amount of hours or people assigned to this, and so it can't be managed or whatever. And it's like, okay, cool. Which is another way of saying we've been paid a lot of money and we've decided to not hire anybody, even on a short-term contract, which is another way of saying we don't believe there is life in this, or it's sustainable, or we don't see our future in it. And, you know, no surprise that then down the line they don't see a future in it. And they, I guess they are breaking up with the hub, right? It's not you, it's us, right? That's kind of what's going on here.
At least publicly.
Yeah. I mean, behind the scenes, who fucking knows, right?
But who, like, behind the scenes fucking knows, but yeah.
Do you reckon that informal must have a few bucks squirreled away at this point, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Where else are they working? Anything else? Like, what I know Ramesh said they're Informal is building cycles and done with the hub.
They've been trying to do a Rust implementation of Tendermint forever. I mean, I literally spoke to some people about it. Like, I mean, they have smart engineers and whatnot. Like, but they've been trying to ship that Rust Tendermint for like,
yeah, it sounds complicated.
2021, something like that. I mean, I spoke to somebody in 22 about it. Right, that was 2 years ago, and you're like, well, Tendermint's out of date, man. So just build something else.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's what this is.
Well, maybe that's what they're doing. Yeah. I mean, I suppose when all you've got is a blockchain, everything looks like a distributed compute platform, you know?
So I guess, I mean, ultimately it sounds like this is something that the juice isn't worth the squeeze, or at least when it comes to either the revenue associated to the cost and the time and effort associated to it, or just the political aspect of it and want to move on. Or maybe they're just tired, right? It could still be profitable. It's just exhausting, and so fuck it.
Or maybe they built it, tested it, still shit, decided to just leave it as an enigma.
Can't fail if you never ship.
Can't fail if you never ship. Well, to be fair to them, for the stuff that they said they were going to pay the community pool, they were being paid by the community pool to ship, they have shipped.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, what is the, I mean, I'm literally going like, what is the other stuff that Inform was working on? It's probably literally on their blog. Give me a second.
Yeah.
I do like the headline of the next one. UAE rugs influencer immigrants.
Continue.
Oh, fucking. What the fuck is that? Expecting what? Coming. Like, oh, geez, that's witty. Yeah.
Yeah. Continue.
In the words of, this is in the words of Rama now, Cryptocito et al. Are in shambles after the UAE introduces new laws prohibiting residents from pump and dumping their followers/viewers. Not really. They just introduced new disclaimer laws for companies promoting digital assets. Kind of funny though, after so many crypto people moved there recently, now we'll know when they're getting paid to shill.
but it's not paid to shill, right? Just is it paid for marketing, or is it just if they're marketing in any sort of way associated to crypto assets? I got it. It's more of the latter. Like they can't just market whether for themselves or for anybody else, or just in general without that kind of.
I presume that is. It would be laws similar to like insider trading,
I guess it's the disclaimer, probably the word. It didn't seem that bad. It was just like, hey, this could go away any possible second, right? Is basically all it was. It wasn't too much beyond that.
Yeah. So I guess, from what Aram is saying, it's they have to just put a disclaimer saying that they've been paid to market this, or they own a lot and are going to dump on your ass.
We're planning on dumping on your ass.
You are the exit liquidity. Yeah.
So I have the answer to what is Cycles. Cycles is the product they're currently focusing on, which is interbank clearing, essentially. But they say it's an open protocol for doing the same job as bank-to-bank clearing. And it's built on the Cosmos stack. And they have a slightly flashy website for it, but no other info.
What is it?
It is a way of doing debt settlement, I guess, because clearing is just debt settlement, right? It's just denominated somehow. So instead of doing debt settlement via a bank, you can instead use Cycles, potentially, because it's not implemented yet, judging by the fact there's just a splash page for it. Which means you can now use any IBC bridged asset to pay somebody and dox that you've done it.
You can pay somebody then. All right. Yeah,
basically. That's, I don't know. I'm being super fucking facetious. Obviously, it would be private, but. But like, you know, it's used as the Cosmos stack. So, whatever. That's a pretty big ask to work back from. Rama says, weirdly, I'm now being the facetious one. Rama is now being the informative one. Rama says in the chat, P2P debt settlement. That's a good way of looking at it. A thought would be, what is debt? And a debt with a capital D has a lot of definitions there's credits and debts and there are simplified models of these things. And a lot of it ends up being transactions and obligations and whatnot. And I don't know, I don't really see how the kind of simplified model for this stuff that's being discussed is actually really that different from any of the stuff that smart contracts we do or the transactions we currently issue on open blockchains are.
To bubble it up, they're moving away from building platforms and they're building apps.
Yeah, I guess they, Rama says, many people can pay for someone else's debt. Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, cool. If they're going to need a better stack than Cosmos if they want to do that, but good luck to them.
Would they? Why? Well, it seems like it'd be fine.
Because Cosmos is like, well, it depends which bits of the Cosmos stack they want to use, but Tendermint ain't quick enough. Can't be optimized to be quick enough without major rewrite. There's a whole bunch of problems with its implementation. It's written in the wrong language, I would say. And the SDK is a fucking disaster. So obviously you don't want core banking infrastructure written with the Cosmos SDK. So that's that. And also actually there's a broader point, right? Which is that multi-party credit is really complicated from a game theory perspective, right? And this has been studied and modeled mathematically in the past, both in real world systems and in e-commerce. So e-commerce fraud and credit fraud are two really, really big areas, especially credit fraud. And it's like an area where I gather at various points, you've been able to very easily get some funding for a PhD if you want to go and do a lot of research into credit fraud, right? And so there's kind of the incentives to cheat, defect and whatever in those are quite well studied. And, like a lot of these systems, like Cosmos itself, like all the stuff we've talked about with upgrades and governance and whatnot. It turns out the hard bit isn't necessarily like stopping a double spend. It's all of the social dynamics of everything else that is involved in the network still functioning, amongst other things. There's a whole bunch of other things, right? Because obviously, like, you can just take cash off people and whatever. There's a whole bunch of stuff to it. It's complex, and I'm an idiot, and I'm way out of my lane here. But anyway, whatever. So the funniest thing I will say about by the way, I should also add, Informal, like, no particular beef with Informal. They're clever people. Like I say, from every conversation I've actually had with Informal engineers, they're clever, lovely people. Sorry. But all of that disclaimer aside, their website is worded in a really funny way. I'm just going to read you the headline of their website. Okay. Informal, your partner across the interchain. Our mission is to foster trust in software and money.
That's it? Our mission is to foster trust in software and money?
Right. But is that sentence, our mission is to foster trust in software and money?
And money.
Or is by the way. It, our mission is to foster trust in software and money? they basically, I think, missed a comma. So it's ambiguous how you're supposed to read that sentence. And I think I choose to read it, our mission is to foster trust in software. And money. Hey, look, all of our business is money. We're just validators. We're the DJs. We know our business is to foster trust in money entering our validator wallets because, you know, we need to dump it to tank the price. That's what we've seen from network analysis, right?
Yeah, of course.
That's what we're here for, right?
Job one. Get it going.
that's why we all got into this space. It wasn't idealism. It was because we wanted to tank the price of random shit coins that were already tanking because their founders were selling. Anyway. Hey, do you remember when there was that whole wild thing where it turned out that like Wolf was just selling the whole time on the way up and all the way down? Anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, that means I guess Informal would launch a token with that too, right?
Does it now?
Yeah, that's where the money's made. I hear that's where you make the money now.
I've heard that this is how you make the money. Not grants. I'm not gonna shit talk on. I nearly started shit talking about something that is currently private.
Next week.
So
printing your own money is a lot easier than taking grants from somebody else.
Yes. I was going to say the regulation in the UK is no longer boys will be boys on printing your own money. And it's no longer boys will be boys on advertising your shit coins, kind of like the UAE. You'll know what I'm speaking about, Usurper, but there was a private situation in the last couple of weeks that was a bit, what have you guys done for us lately that involved something?
Oh, yeah.
And there was one particular box on this thing. And my reaction was, I'm pretty sure if we did anything around that, it would be flat illegal in our jurisdiction.
Yeah.
kind of shill tokens. We just run servers, man. We don't know what the servers do.
I don't know. I don't even know where these came from.
Yeah, no, exactly. Your Noel's gonna have that problem. Police raid his house. He's like, I have no idea. I'm pretty sure we don't even have any servers. And they're like, sir, you have 1,500 hard drives in your garage? They're secondhand hard drives with very heavy amounts of wear on them.
They won't even be able to get in the gate. Fucking bell doesn't work. guess he's not here.
They're not getting in here.
Guess he's not here. We have to turn around.
You know, if my remote broke while I was away, I don't know how the fuck we would get into this place. We'd have to
scale it.
We'd have to get fucking helicoptered in or something.
Well,
don't you have a secret pad out there or anything?
Or a key, or just like keyhole or something?
You can't get in with the key. No, there's a keypad that doesn't work.
Oh, maybe that's something to look at.
Yes, to fucking take the gate off.
This is classic validator problem solving. It's like, well, there's only this one line of defense before you know, literally everything is ruined forever.
What happens if I lose this SSH key? What happens if
that would be bad.
Kind of fucked in that situation.
Oh, please God, no, not the SSH key.
should we do something about that? it'll probably be all right. Fine. No, be fine.
That's fine. There's only one. This one point of failure will never fail.
This one point of failure. It'd be very unfortunate if it failed. Highly improbable, some would say.
It'd be nice if Schultze was here, because I would like to ask him if they, because they have, like, you know, more people in the team. I'm wondering, like, what they use for their SSH key management, and like
they might distribute them based on groups or something.
Well, there's software for managing that. That way, like, if you can have teams, and if you like ditch a team member, you can just press the button and they no longer can SSH.
Yeah,
we can just use Ansible for that.
You can definitely do that
quicker. They lock you out.
Depends on, but also in those situations, there probably is some stuff that's sensitive. But for the most part, like if you wanted, like if you had that case, like you would have it, where you might have Horcrux nodes or those types of things that only you have access. Excuse me, that you have access to, but you might distribute. You know, like if you had a little minion, meaning you have access to all the nodes, but you can't do any damage with that. You know what I mean? Other than shutting shit down, but
fuck your nodes up.
Yeah, but I mean, nobody's gonna be. I mean, you can't. If you had somebody in the house who wanted to be malicious, there's really no way to stop those things.
Yeah,
right. You're really trying to protect against mistakes and stupidity.
I mean, like a very simple,
but maliciousness is really hard. Like that's really difficult to do something with.
I mean, a very simple approach that's worked in the past is just you have a bastion. You have a bastion, and that's where you have your configuration. So whether or not you want to do it with Ansible, it's essentially a single change on the bastion to lock somebody out. And then obviously if you're using any cloud provider, it's always a one click to revoke. Like, you can use IAM groups, and or you can even actually ask, to be fair, you can also actually SSO your key management from a cloud provider and then extend that even to bare metal quite trivially. Again, a good way of potentially doing that is a bastion host that is within, if your physical infrastructure is not in a situation where you would be prevented from putting it in a virtual network with something on a cloud host, you could basically have a really, really tiny VM in a cloud host managed by key management from the cloud host, and then do a similar thing. I mean, there's a whole bunch of ways to do this, right? That's just,
which I mean, that's basically what we do. I can just shut the bash, because like we don't have any SSH ports exposed. So you have to be in the front. You have to be through your gate before you could actually even get to the point of using the key. I did look at a while ago. I don't know how we're on this topic, but I looked at which I might do depending on what we do with our ISO, but I looked at like Jump Cloud or something similar to that, where number one, there's an auth layer that you have to get through number one first. And then there's also two factor associated to that auth layer, and you can build in like timeouts of that. And then from there, you basically have a token that has a limited use that you could use it associated to specific hosts. And you can build multiple different role-based access controls to say, with this user has access to this IP space or these hosts or whatever else. And then you have like it's basically like an LDAP type structure. And so you sign with LDAP, you use like Duo or a different like two factor, you get a push. And then from there you have a token that you can use that's on servers. Now do you need, like I said, do you need it on every fucking server though? I don't know.
Yeah, but like it's quite high.
There's some stuff like I would like Horcrux nodes or freaking Aptos and things like that where you don't have like there's keys in the wild.
So pure bull market vibes. This is going back a little while now. We have one host where this is still true of, but back in the day we used to have every single network isolated from each other, all with different two-factor authentication configured when the hosts were brought up. So you had to basically, as part of the bootstrapping, it would fall out of the automatic bit, give you the recovery, and then re-enter it. And then obviously any additional user, because it was using a different daemon for that, you'd have to add them and then also give them a what's it called? A 2FA thing, and then you'd have to add that back in. So that was pretty good. But then it was one of those where I was like, this is amazing if we hire, and then we ended up covering everything we needed to do with the odd freelance bit of extra work here, there, and everywhere. And number of times that these boxes needed to be SSH'd into was
minuscule. That's the thing is, I don't really go into too many notes. What would be cool, I would like to do though, is I'd like to figure out a decent vault structure that, I mean, we use vaults like an Ansible and things like that, but I'd really like to do a public cloud vault piece to pull down specific keys at runtime, or a specific cred at runtime. And then like we're doing stuff with SSV, right? Like those SSV node keys are on the machine. And so it would be great to have some of these tools allow it where I can either call a vault directly off that tool, or I can pre-run that through Docker, grab that structure and then store it and then read it basically off of memory. And then once, if somebody gets in the machine, or if it reboots, or if somebody takes a drive out of it or something else like that, which if it's not even, whether it's in our custody or not, it's not there, like it's off the machine. So Aptos is a good example of that too, because those keys are literally, you have to have them on the machine. And then so having that be, you know, have that be in memory and carry that forward and then be able to pull that down and even like pull it out of a vault. And then if the machine reboots or if I have to run it, then it does like a push notification to me and I can approve that or something similar to that. So like this machine is requesting this secret. I want to get to that point. So I've been looking at it a little bit here and there. I just don't have the time since everything else is exploding at the same time. But that would be cool. I'd like to do that. It'd be great to get some things like out of repos, even if they're encrypted, and get them in a different structure where I can call into that vault with a key.
Well, I think it's also like anything else, isn't it? There's like anything that involves a certain amount of time has to be a profit motive or whatever. And like the bull market energy when you know, we were like, oh yeah, everything has to be 2FA'd or whatever and blah, 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 blah. You know, like we're making money every month, you know, in Cosmos. Yeah, we're losing money in Cosmos now. That's why we're coming off of our last networks, right? And I think if we were doing more in the custodial space, then I think
that'd be totally different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my threat profiling and all that stuff would be completely out of here, you know. So like there are, yeah, exactly. Like this kind of structures you're talking about are much more appropriate in terms of.
Yeah, there's not much loss of funds issues that we have with that stuff. You know what I mean? Like the big thing would be like keys that are supposed to do a val and double signing and us getting slashed. But yeah. Most of these networks are even reducing that slashing amount.
I'm not sure that it's difficult, right? Because, you know, slashing is the current leading solution to the nothing at stake problem. But it's not really clear that it solves it. But it is clear that it is likely that if you don't do anything, eventually you will get Byzantine behavior. And the only other competing sort of design for solving nothing at stake is simply to make your blockchain not decentralized, right?
Okay.
So what am I talking about here, right? So nothing at stake is where if there's two versions of the truth, you just sign both of them and you move on, right? Because if there's no slashing, who gives a shit, right? That's mm-hmm. what slashing is meant to prevent, right? In the event where you just say, we are the foundation, we control the chain, you don't need to worry about nothing at stake, right? Because if a validator is malicious, does anything Byzantine, anybody notices, you just take away the foundation delegation and they fall out the set and, you know,
basically
nobody gives a shit, right? So in any other situation other than that, the economic incentives say that if there is a technical means by which a validator would be able to potentially sign two versions of the truth, they'll be incentivized to do so. And obviously, potentially Byzantinely attack the chain if there were some profit motive for altering, you know, the truth. If they were, say, the proposer or something like that, obviously it depends on the P2P mechanism being used, because they're all slightly different. Like the vector by which you could attack the chain is different in Cosmos versus Ethereum, and a lot of the theory, if you like, of this came out of the Ethereum space, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the only solutions to this that don't involve any kind of slashing seem to have come in situations where it's simply not been implemented. And in most of those, as far as I can tell, that's because the either the amount you need to bond to put a validator into the set is so high that Byzantine behavior is by definition disincentivized very, very heavily. And additionally, the foundation can actually pull levers to get validators out of the set because they control the majority of the tokens still. Because, you know, if you look at actually, like Bitcoin's a good example, right, where even though it's really expensive to actually run a miner that can still keep up and actually be part of a pool that makes money, those mining pools are still incentivized to do everything under their power to like mess with the truth, essentially, right? So in every situation where you don't have a foundation able to coordinate and pull stake, essentially like defeating decentralization that way, you need an additional economic incentive to stop validators behaving Byzantinely is the theory of the nothing at stake thing. And I'm not 100% aware that there is another good solution to it, but I do know that quite a number of networks seem to just be like, YOLO.
I think that's what most do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. But hey, it will be interesting. It's one of those things where you're like, it would be interesting if somebody comes up with an elegant solution to that. Be interesting from an economics perspective. It'd be interesting from a technical perspective.
It doesn't sound like Informal's working on it, so it might be somebody else might step in. Sounds like stepping away from that one.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, that sounds tough.
That is difficult.
That's a tough one. We'll give that one a miss, lads.
Let's do this debt thing.
So I'm just noticing we had some comments that we skipped over. When we were talking about cycles and Informal, Rama said, cycles is Ethan's socialism for blockchain project. Great hot take. Lil D says, cycles doesn't make sense to me. The idea of applying graph theory to payments on network to figure out settlement patterns is cool. But does any chain have the necessary utilization for it? Oof. I've just witnessed a murder. And also, actually, to be fair, Little D also said later, I think there's probably some important reasons why mutual credit systems haven't really worked.
There probably are.
Yeah, there's some important ones.
Telescope technology is not necessarily one of those, but we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, well, I suppose the flip side of that was, you know, we talked about it literally 18 months ago on the Poddo, like, in Graeber's book on debt. There's a whole section on how in medieval England and elsewhere tallies were used for debt recording, and I guess it comes down to a philosophical question, right? When people accept the tally of a debt as a representation of a debt that can be passed on as a multi-party debt or a multi-party credit, I suppose, as much as a multi-party debt, is that credit what's actually happening, right? Is that credit, is there a credit in a debt there, or is it the representation that's the important thing? Because the debt itself is a intangible obligation.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize there's probably some connection between chosen possession and chosen action here, but it's late here and I lack the brain power to make the connection if there is one. I guess it's like the ability to action it, right? And the physical manifestation is about being able to action it in the future.
Good, I have no fucking clue.
I don't know. Man, payments is complicated. As soon as you start asking what are payments and what are debts, you know, it's...
You should do that for your doctorate.
Oh, I tried to write the word debt at one point, and it made a whole... I made the mistake, right, I did a presentation and I made the mistake of putting credit with a capital C on a slide.
Yeah.
And then I got hit with, in the questions section, I got hit with the questions about how credit would work in the situation that I had outlined. And I was like, oh, no, like, we're talking about a really simple model for multi-party credit, like a really, really simple model.
Now, yeah.
We put it with a capital C. That means it has the implications of, and I was like, oh, damn. Okay, well, what's the question? And then they just hit me with this really clever, like, well worked out, detailed, just like, just off the top of their head. They were like, well, because this would then mean that and then that. So then, I mean, that's really, like, I just don't see how it works. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, stop hitting me.
That's awful.
Yeah. I was just like, I don't even think they were trying to be like, oh, actually, I don't even think they were trying to own me. They just were asking like a legitimate question, but just knew way more than me. And I just got owned in front of a room of people and was just like, I literally have no idea how to even begin answering what you've just said. But
yeah, but you're dealing with. Yeah, but the capital C thing. The capital C thing. I mean,
but maybe I should have. I think, like, literally, my answer was like, I should probably go back and change the slide to be a small C.
No shit. Yeah, exactly.
Oh God. Yeah, this is probably why people don't talk to me in the department anymore.
They don't. Oh man.
Yeah.
So, what else is up?
What's happening? Well, you had a big outage, didn't you?
You're
a tired boy.
We did. So we have a couple data centers in the US, and then our largest one is a ways from me. It's 400 miles.
Is it just downhill from a swimming pool somewhere in Brisbane, Australia? Just go
in your car immediately.
Oh, so. Dude, that sounds awful. It's like a five and a half hour drive for me.
Oh, nice.
Something like that, which is like, that's like your backyard. I know, but
the fucking drive to the mailbox around here.
I was going to say, nothing not on Null's property. just past the swimming pool.
So Monday, it was about now, it was like 6 o'clock or something. Monday, I'm just hanging out with my feet up, you know, watching shit. I was watching some logs and some stuff, and then everything just halted. And I lost my VPN into there, and like all our monitoring is in there as well. So I got some alerts from external monitors that we have, but all our internal monitors were not firing. And then I realized that basically that the data center was down. And basically, like, it just started to get a good understanding of what the fuck was going on. And so my partner, who is about 20 minutes from that data center, was on a flight from there to San Jose, California, which is not great. So, but Delta has Wi-Fi. So I'm talking back and forth and trying to figure out exactly what the fuck is going on. And we think it might be, we weren't really sure what it was. It was acting very weird. Cause we could see that the inbound traffic went to 800 megabit inbound, which was really strange, even though there was nothing responding. Which no, we should talk about too, because I think, I don't know what that would have been. It would have been literally like Zabbix things calling home and failing. It was really strange. So we went from like 100 megabit inbound to 800. So first thing I thought was like, hey, we're getting DDoSed or something similar to that, which it wasn't. Cause that would usually be more than that. Like 800 megabits, not enough to saturate the gig line in this one example. So anyway, it took, I was on calls with our provider. We're trying to figure out exactly what the fuck is going on. And then it basically took a few hours to realize exactly what the hell is going on, because it was very difficult to troubleshoot remotely. And we do have an LTE backup here too. So meaning I can get into that, some parts of that stack through a cellular line that we have as a backup. And that's really for just from a management perspective. Like if it's lights out, I might need to do something. Like I might need to, if for some reason, like all the fibers cut to this place and I need to shut down a validator, I needed to grab keys, or I need to do something that I want to make sure that when it came back up, that service was off, right? Like there's a lot of those examples, right? Like if you're not running Horcrux and things like that, but there are a lot of those situations. And so that's kind of back up there. So we end up, what we start, and but nothing was routing. We're trying to figure out what's going on. So long story short, it took like, honestly, it took a few hours to figure out exactly what the fuck was going on, because we actually thought it was a burned out SPF port is really what we thought. We thought that we had inbound fiber that was dark. Then we lost connectivity to the uplink switch, to the host switch, and that went dark because that stopped pinging, which means we had thing out. They said there was no light, so which means we know that whole thing is dark. And so why would that be dark? Because we could actually see that the router, that the one of the core switches was up, and so blah blah blah. So what we realized was And for the most part, actually, everything was fine. I do have some shit chains that are not on Horcrux. And so those were down because I run those off of cheap VMs, not to be named, and some testnet boxes and things like that. But there's some other things that we run for Chainlink and others that are housed there, because actually one of the most resilient things that we have, because we have a pretty large vSphere infrastructure, and so we can move VMs around and not deal with downtime associated with those. And we're not gonna go down because of a drive issue in those situations. So what we ended up realizing was that we have four switches in this rack, and one of them is like a 24 port all fiber, and the other one is 48 port with fiber uplinks and has all copper. And we realized that that copper switch, which actually has the inbound link or one of the inbound links, is dead. And so they haven't been what they call the stack, which means they're connected to each other via this umbilical, two umbilicals actually between switches. There's four power supplies among the two switches. So there's fucking tons of power. They're on two different battery backup units, and we knew that there was no power issues. And that switch just basically browned out. It just fucking died. That's the end of it. Like, we couldn't get it to work. We couldn't get it to come up. We could not get, we have console to it. It was dead. It was just a fucking mess. It really was. So, the remote hands at that center is not great. And so we ended up, it took us a few hours, but we ended up getting the inbound moved to a different switch, which basically just take literally unplugging something and plugging it someplace else from a fiber perspective, which gave us some outbound and routing on that VLAN. And then from there, we ended up hard booting that switch, like literally pulled four power supplies out and just letting it sit for a minute and putting it back in. And then that secondary came back, which was really weird. Because if that didn't come back, we had some other issues. That means we knew we were going to have to, we do have extra hardware, but it just can become a bigger issue that we were concerned that some remote hands would not be able to do. So we got through that, and then it came back. So we were down for, it must have been 9 hours, something like that. I think I was awake for most of it, which is probably the longest that we've had in those type of situations, especially in those DCs where that you have a bunch of issues. We have multiple inbound lines would have helped, but just because we have four massive switches in there, and that would have had some redundancy in there, although you have to deal with outbound routes and things like that. BGP wouldn't have helped. There's a bunch of things that we dealt with that were very specific to just like and plus Jeff being on a flight didn't help. Like, that just slowed us down. Things like that where you're not, you know, if he was in town, we would have been back up in like an hour or less, right? Because he would have been over there, we'd have fixed it up, would have been no problem. But when you deal with like remote data centers or you're dealing with that type of thing, it becomes a challenge. So it was stressful.
What kind of stuff was affected? Because I know you're on like a mixed
some Cosmos chains we got jailed on, but again, they're trying small things. We had honestly, I wasn't really worried about any of those. If they were saying there, once I had a connectivity backup in the morning, at least outbound, I could have moved some of that stuff beforehand. I talked to Null about undelegating associated with those, right, and just taking all the stake away just so we get jailed and not get slashed. But the ones that we were dealing with, I mean, we're talking like, honestly, not to badmouth chains, but there were ones that we had less than like $10,000 staked to the machine total, like total, everybody, like less than, or even some of those are probably less than that. So it was really no big deal. Like, I wasn't really too worried about that. And then OCR for Chainlink was in there, and some CCIP or some stuff that we do there. Not the actual nodes are not there, like the RPC is not there, but the actual core of what we do is there. And there's a couple other things too, actually, which I didn't really think about, which I'm going to change. We run a pretty large load balancer out of there to be able to have a single endpoint for maybe 30 L1 L2 chains. And so if somebody needs an L1, like DYDX is a good example of that. A DYDX needs an L1. That L1 is actually in that data center. And so it's calling back to that L1. And then there's a load balancer structure, or, you know, it's in a failover piece where it calls a single Ethereum node. And then if that one is down or I've been doing maintenance, then it goes to the next one. And that is in there. So that's actually should not be in there. So like, I'm going to move that to a cloud services type of thing. Cause that's not really that big of it. It doesn't move that much traffic. But it is important enough where, I might have multiple of those up. Actually, I'm just going to copy what I have and put it in a couple different places just so if I need to redirect something, I could do that. So it didn't cost us any, I mean, it wasn't financially painful. It was stressful, painful, and it's also a lot of communication because I was trying to keep teams involved with what the hell is going on. Yeah, it was something, man. It was fucking pain in the ass. Like, ugh, just a perfect storm of stupid shit. So we have a long list of things we want to change to be able to help with that. A separate redundant route outbound, because what we thought was the issue wasn't the issue, but it could be an issue in the future. We have some ideas around switch segregation, and we're gonna build a complete out of band network, which basically means we have a primary and then you have a total separate one that has no traffic from the outbound and has a totally 100% cut across. And then all of our nodes in there will be multi-homed, which means it has primary outbound. And if for some reason we need to switch it, I can go back and change. We can use something like IPSLA or other types of things that would just take specific nodes and redirect them to a different outbound. So all their IPs would change, but at least they would start talking. You know what I mean? At least we have some outside there. It just gets really expensive is really what it is. Cause we're just adding costs and those types of things. But again, this, I was hoping to get rid of this whole stack. But the more that we start dealing with it and we start talking about like Zabbix HA, which I would do another one of these outside of that data center.
I was going to mention that V7 yeah. HA, baby, it looks pretty good.
Yeah. So that's something. And then now, but that helps me also think about, you know, I was thinking about HA more from like my first thing when I think about HA is like hardware failure, right? That's like my first thing. But, the real issue with that is, like when that was down, here's and in the middle of all that shit, in the middle of all that stuff, we had an issue where on this latest Say upgrade, we're getting some RPC traffic that is basically putting the CPUs to 100% and they're starting to lag. And so at like 4 a.m. that same fucking night, I have an external alert going that all our RPCs are down or there's nothing that's responding to requests. And I got down here after like 30 minutes of sleep and I realized that they're all like way high and I just restart the process and it goes down to zero and it's fine for a while. And then it happens again. So there's a Say issue with that. But I realized that like, I'm so fucking blind, so much monitoring that I feel so blind without that. There's a ton of stuff like anything that we were running. We could have been jailed on things or you have outages or machine dies or fucking anything, right? There's so much that we are monitoring. Like, I don't even know. Well, dude.
There's a lot of faith in that fucking, in that one instance, right? You got to,
oh, it's crazy.
Time to like start looking at HA for that for sure.
Not only that, but I mean, just like, I'm pulling 262 different hosts of data in Zabbix. And then so it's on average, we're pulling 700 different values per second, 700 values per second, right? If you add them all this shit up, right? That's all bare, that could be bare metal. It could be HTTP type things. It could be missed blocks. There's a ton of things that we collectively measure, right? 700 a second at 9 hours is a fucking lot of visibility of things that are being checked that are there's so many things that could go wrong. That's really what it is, right? And when you don't have that safety net of, oh, if something does go wrong, I'm going to get this phone call with the Yakety Sax. When that is, and that you can, it's fun to make fun of that, right? And like, it's so fucking annoying. But when that's gone, like, I'm thinking like, all right, what else could fail right now? And how the fuck would I know? Like, and we have a lot of external monitors too, and like big services, but not everything. You know what I mean? Like if Aptos goes down, actually, we have like four different monitors, both internally and externally. Like we have a bunch of those and like things like that for Chainlink or for our big RPC arrays that we run or those types of things. But there's so many others. Like there's so many others.
Yeah.
And that really sucks. So, yeah, so we came up with a pretty good, we're good meeting again, but we came up with a good list of just hardening things that I think will be quite good. Even like, you know, we even track like what power supplies goes to exactly what port on what PDUs and go into what are, you know, backup units. And, you know, like there's a ton of mapping that goes on there and we know exactly what ports on the Ethernet side are going to which things and for what. And so if there's a brownout port and there's a name on it, we have a good understanding of what that is. Like, and it just becomes a data management nightmare of keeping track of some of that stuff. But, and then, so what that means is that then we're talking about, we do have a change management database, but we're starting to get a little bit more advanced in terms of change management and things like that. Because also in those situations, what's really annoying is like, if you're trying to figure out what the hell's going on and you need to like, oh, let's go see if this is happening. And then, oh, how do I find that out? And then you got to go look up this, you know, figure out like these four switches, if I, like we have four power supplies and the two switches, two are going to two different battery backup units and two are going directly into PDUs. If I needed to shut those four down, how the fuck would we do that? Like which battery backup unit would I kill and which port on this PDU, and how would I make sure that thing was off if I don't have a camera facing at it? Like those types of things, you get headaches really quick. So we're just trying to think of like how to, if this had happened, like we couldn't shut down both APCs. Like that would be a real problem, but I could shut down one. But that APC is plugged into the same switch that's browned out. Oh, fuck. So I can't do that. So then like, how the hell, like what, how else can I talk to this thing? And like all that type of shit. So it's, and of course switch outages is probably the worst thing that can happen because you're just in the dark. Right. So we had all our fiber was working and we could see all the VMs and all that kind of stuff, but the actual, you know, vSphere and IPMI and, you know, things that actually use copper were all dark. And that becomes really, really painful when you're trying to troubleshoot from a couple thousand miles away. Yeah. So, or having somebody standing from front of that rack who doesn't know any of that type of stuff, who's trying to guide and say, okay, try this. And, you know, doing a FaceTime call to see what the hell's blinking and what's not in certain situations. Like, so yeah, anyway, that was good. I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Yeah, troubleshooting with remote hands could be quite annoying.
Well, I mean, even for you, like you have stuff now too. Like we're starting to write run books, and those run books are like, again, what ports, what goes to what diagrams, what PDUs, how are those PDUs controlled? What are the logins for those? What are the IPs for those? So if a remote hands gets in there and they plug a laptop into something that's sitting there that's working, like where do they go? How do they get in? What is that password available easily? What exact, you know, there's a million things in there to like try to figure out how to troubleshoot remotely, or you're heading down there, which might be fine. But if you're in the US and you have an outage and you have somebody standing in front of that rack that you're paying, and trying to guide them through these types of things, some of those things might be impossible. Like you might not be able to do it. Right. And so, it's a good thing. So we started talking about we have run books for other stuff, but like what does that run book look like? And like, what are those types of items that have to be in there? And so it just makes you, you know, those types of things like really open your eyes to, oh fuck. Like what about this situation? So out of band will be our first, our LTE backup worked out great. If we didn't have that, we would have been fucked. That was really nice to be able to have a wireless option into that data center. We're going to add one to our other one as well, which we don't have right now, although the other one is not nearly as important as this one. We'll do a full out of band network that will allow, we'll do IPSLA on specific things, whether that's automatic or even manual. It would just be ability to divert things from A to B. It was good. I mean, it was, you know, at the time it was miserable, but now you like look back and you're like, all right, that was good. Cause I think no matter what we do there, it'll come out stronger.
So we like my rack is pretty new and well, the new rack is pretty new, but, even like looking at the hardware we're going to put in ours and, you know, learning off some of your, we were sort of thinking about this beforehand, but now hearing about what happened with you, I think we're almost certainly going to do this now, is multi-chassis link aggregation from the routers. So we have to get new routers, but basically like these routers all have 25 gig ports in them. And mm-hmm. then so they, you have two internet connections coming in, mm-hmm. one to each router. And then the multi-chassis link aggregation is basically you take a 25 gig from each router mm-hmm. or switch at this stage, and then you can plug two 25s into each chassis. Mm-hmm. And then basically if one entire router goes down, then you've still got a route from the internet to the to each chassis. Mm-hmm. So you can't, like you can lose an internet connection or you can lose an entire router and you should still be good. But the only, like you say, with the IPs on the outgoing can change, but you can actually have like, I think you mentioned that you can multi-home the IP. So you can actually route it through two different providers if you use BGP, and your own IPs, I think.
You can, you don't want to manage BGP. So they would manage that.
No, our providers do that.
That's also really, that's also challenging, to be honest. So if you're managing it yourself, like, because it's not magic. Like there's a lot of,
yeah,
especially if you're sinkholing type things or like, there's a lot to that, that has to go in there, but.
So you don't necessarily need to do that, but it would be good to have.
No, but if you're like, if somebody figured that out and somebody's pissed at you and they're DDoSing that IP, like then you have somebody's going to manually type of sinkhole that, right, and be able to create a separate route to that, which will help, but not necessarily solve the issue. Or like we'll have two separate networks on two separate two whole network spaces. One of those will probably be identifiable just through DNS and everything. The other one would not. And so and then we'll do something where we'll change default routes to a totally different IP space. Because we talked about BGP as well. Like that's not a bad idea. It's just it doesn't solve all those issues. And then two IP spaces creates new ones. So it's not like it's a better situation. It's just different. And then if in those situations, if both those 25 gig routers or if they're actual switches, if they have enough capacity for all of the hardware underneath them, obviously you need connections to both of those, whether that's in the same VLAN or multiple VLANs. And then you have to figure out how to manage that as well. Right. So
these particular routers, you can basically just trunk the two 100 gig ports and then direct connect them with a 200 gig link. Yeah. So basically all the traffic is just forwarded between both back and forward with the multi-chassis link aggregation.
But usually only one of those inbound links would be active to your provider, not both.
Yeah, yeah, with the internet, yeah.
Yeah.
You can either aggregate them or you can have like a backup. So you might send all the outgoing traffic through one, but then you kind of get problems with TLS when you do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So
I think we'll probably just test it separately and see if we can get it humming.
Yeah. 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 So I think that's about it with that shit. That was enough. So yeah. Now I'm behind on everything else. I have so much shit to do. It's just like,
you don't want that stress, man. Fucking that is.
We've done collectively, I think you guys are in the same position, but I've done so much to not get woke up at 3 a.m. Like I've done so much to do that. And
I sometimes wonder, like, I'm like, is all of the effort to not get woken up at 3 a.m. worth it? Like yes. Maybe I just get woken up at 3 a.m. a couple of times. Like,
no, it's definitely worth it.
It's definitely worth it. Beforehand, well, I was like, yeah, I don't know.
Bear in mind at the point that you're at was at my peak AWS usage. No. When my one was at your age, we were pretty much 100% AWS for the first, like, stuff that wasn't on AWS went in the direction of AWS for that first couple of months because I was damned if I was being woken up in the middle of the night. We were paying for it.
Yeah, there's a fleet of fucking, yeah, like... There's some value in that knowing that service is going to be active and you're not responsible for that.
Yeah, there were definitely times when it was just like, there is nothing left in the tank right now. If something goes down, it's, yeah. And it's difficult, right? Especially if you're, I mean, and that's maybe a failure of our model, right? Where we have needed additional help, it's been freelancers and whatnot. And it means it's harder to cover hands when there is a big, if there is a big out of hours problem. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something that you couldn't have scheduled for, or you couldn't have got in extra help ahead of time or planned for, then you have an inherent kind of weakness that can only really be solved by automation or paying money to something else. In this case, Jeff Bezos. So, hey, Jeffy.
Yeah. I think I've already, like, our baby's 4 weeks old now. I think I've definitely, on multiple occasions, done one-handed laptop with the baby crying at like 2 a.m.
For sure.
Yeah. Because sometimes they just cry and they don't shut up. It's like, got to hold them.
That's fun.
Yeah. But you also got to work.
shit's got to get done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. That's just life, I suppose, at this point.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, some of that you just have to do what you do. What I found now is like, I also make dumb mistakes in those situations. That's what I get more worried about is not necessarily being up at 3, but like doing something stupid because I want the fucking alarm to go away. and you go, ah, shit, I shouldn't have done that. Like,
yeah,
fuck.
Well, really, also, just like when you're really, really. So we had, like, I really, really distinctly remember the. We had an, was it the Aptos migration? I think we were the, I think it was actually that one. I think it was, we were the canary for the Aptos migration, you know, when there was that big configuration change and they were like, oh, now is the time for everybody to move boxes as well.
Oh, yeah.
So the spec changed. And so we took that opportunity to move off of AWS. That was when we moved the AWS boxes. So it would have been, I don't know, August, September last year, something like that. Because the Wii one was about 6 months old, so I felt more confident about that. And there was distinctly a point where I can't remember what it was. There was some reason we had an issue with the box syncing. So long ago, I can't remember. But we were essentially out. We were down in production. We'd already done the switcheroos and everything. And I think, like, looking back, actually, what probably had happened was we got kicked for the initial downtime. You know, you just get like backed off in terms of, like, that's how the peering works.
It kicks you out.
Yeah, and switching over the DNS obviously helps you for discoverability, right? But your node is always going to be dialing out. The problem is actually that I've remembered what the problem was. Okay, I'll get to that in a second. But your node should always be dialing out, right? And it got to one, it was one of these things where just the length of time it took to sync the node, even on good hardware, was substantial, right? And so by the time it had synced, and then we did the switcheroo, it was getting late in our time zone. This is a classic example of you should always wait till the morning, of course. But it was just like, well, look, we need to get this done. We had a nominal deadline in terms of, like, when we were asked to get it done by. And then, you know, of course, the end result is that you're down in production at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I, like, really, 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 really distinctly remember setting an alarm for 6 hours after that and just going to bed.
Well, some of those, like in that one, there's no slashing structure there, right? So.
Well, it was just that,
I don't think there is there?
No, but you're losing money, obviously.
You're losing money. You're not,
and you're losing good. You're losing goodwill.
For sure.
So, you know, with the SLA you've got in place, you don't really have that wiggle room. But it was one of those where, like, obviously, the problem here is something obvious, right? And flailing on the end of the hook is not going to help getting off the hook. So, yeah, like, got 6 hours sleep, woke up, immediately got a cup of coffee and solved it within 5 minutes. Like, all of the stuff, like the sync and whatever, had sorted itself out. The node was by that, you know, it was very straightforward to confirm the node was dialing out. And the problem was that at least in the Aptos data structure, a VFN and a validator node are very, very similar. They have like one or two additional pieces of metadata and a little bit of, there's an additional bit of state, isn't there, in the state store. But it's very small compared to the main database, like 500 gig, isn't it? And the additional state is like
small,
a gigabyte or two or something. It's pretty small, isn't it?
Small, right.
And there was basically a misconfiguration that meant that state couldn't be picked up by the runtime. That was it. It was there. And that was the thing, you tear your hair out. You look on the thing and you're like, it's mounted. It's there. What the fuck? And you're like, oh, right. Yeah. But for this reason, it's not being picked up. And it was like a 15 minute fix. And you're like, it wasn't even like, and most of that 15 minutes was thinking, oh, right, this is why. How do you resolve it?
Yeah.
Like, rather than like, well, if you're kind of the, that sort of, and you know, this is a thing that Jack talked about before. A very long time ago on the podcast about a design decision within slashing in Cosmos and Tendermint, which is like the default time, which is suggested as whatever it is, like 13 hours, because the idea is if something's bad enough, a team should be able to just go to bed, get some sleep, and then attack it with a, I don't know. I mean, I always took that at face value as something that Jack said that was actually just done by design. I don't know if that's true, but I kind of like that idea. I think if you've, for node operations where people have been up, if this were like a consortium blockchain, or it were like infrastructure paid for by a client, the rules are just, completely different. If somebody pays you for 2 years with a fixed fee and says at the end of 2 years, we're going to discontinue this contract if the SLAs aren't met, you just go out and you pay for people to cover all the shifts and you do a particular service model. And it's just a very, very different environment. But, mm-hmm. For something permissionless that you can't really plan for or whatever, it's like,
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Exactly. Right. It's super, super different. And I think you have to plan around a like quite different operating model for most of your providers. So,
Well, not only that, like I think the whole point of this is to build resilient networks. So it's, I think part of that resiliency is
you're only as strong as the 33% of your weakest validators.
Right. That's one of the reasons for appropriate VP percentages, but it's meant to be resilient. And same thing, like that's some of the stuff we talk about on the Chainlink side too, is because, we're providing value and data in there, but we're one of many. And so the idea is that the whole purpose of this is to build networks that are resilient to this type of shit, and shit happens. Like my example and yours, and there's a ton of reasons why.
I know Noel's buggered off from the podcast for a moment, so he doesn't have to volunteer a fuck up that Big Wolf's blockchain have made.
Exactly. It's like I'm getting out of here.
It's like we're sharing stories that make us look like battle hardened organizations, but maybe ones that make mistakes. Well, Big Wolf's blockchain don't make fucking mistakes.
Do we have a Kujira archive node yet? No, I don't think we do. Yeah, no, it's meant to be resilient. So I think it's fine. Like the whole point of that is I think 13 hours is a pretty good. I mean, we were at 9 or 10. And that was just because if it was during the day, it would have been a totally different time. But it happened like at the worst possible time. It was like 7 p.m., which was actually 7 or 8 p.m., which was
so
really
similar difficult. Similar to what happened to us. Like you go out at 7 or 8 p.m. and you're in that kind of, depending on where your head's at and how busy your day has been, like you could be already burned from the day.
I was, for sure.
And you keep pushing your head against it till 2 in the morning and just...
And we were so sure that it was an SPF failure, meaning like that copper to fiber transition, and like everything made sense around that. Like it totally made sense in terms of what it was. And then we had a realization that we had something tagged on a switch in terms of a switch port that was outdated. And then we had another switch that had that something else that was tagged and blah, blah, blah. And we started like, let's double check this. And then once we started to realize what the hell was going on, we recognized that though what we thought was the issue was actually not the issue. And we probably spent 2 or 3 hours talking about how to solve that problem and what we could do with that and how to verify it. And then once we got to that point of realizing that what the problem we were solving was actually changed, then it's like we started all over, right? Now we're at this problem, and now we're 3 hours later, and it's 1, right, Eastern. And now I'm like, fuck it. Now I get you trying to bring up the brain power to like, make that, go through that whole process again. Like, okay, how do we start with this? And like, okay, what can we do about this? And where's the umbilical structure working? You start all over, and that's really when like that's when the brain's like, all right, fuck this. Like you're just like, all right, it's too much. And then your point, and like the point was like we thought the stuff that we had, I knew we had probably 13 hours or 12 hours of actual downtime, and some of the ones I wasn't worried about, and it would have my actions would have been different if the consequences were different. Like I would have spent time elsewhere versus where we spent. If we had like real slashing issues or things like that, where we felt like we were going to have a problem with it. But yeah, that's, it is what it is. What the hell are you going to do?
It's as your business partner once said to me when I had my phone stolen, it's a cheap lesson in the grander scheme of things.
This was probably a cheap lesson. Yeah, I guess.
This is probably a cheap lesson in the grander scheme of things.
I don't even know, dude.
Well, when you see him, tell him that's what I said. That's right.
Yep.
I'm sorry you didn't get any sleep and you had like a monumentally stressful 13 hours, but
yeah,
it's a cheap lesson.
It was overall.
And do you know who told me that? And do you know who told me that? Do you know who told me that?
Yeah, actually, you're right. It was an incredibly cheap lesson in the grand scheme of things. Everything was backup.
The problem with that, it's a good one-liner, right? But the problem is there's very few things in life where when you take a step back and you have a little think about it, pretty much any situation where somebody doesn't come to physical harm, in the grander scheme of things, you're like, well, I guess it could be seen as a cheap lesson given the potential worst case scenario. Or possibly I think too much about worst case scenarios, but
yeah.
It still sucks though, doesn't it?
Yes. That's it, man. That's all. What else do we have to report this week?
Well, Null's presumably dealing with baby in some way, shape, or form.
I assume so. Yeah, that's probably pretty fair.
Or maybe the pool's overflowed and flooded his house.
I did watch Samurai Cop, which was a total fucking mistake. That's actually like it reminded me of like, probably too young for this, but this is a US thing, but it reminded me of like a late 90s, early 2000s Cinemax film. You know what that means? It's like
that really shitty movie channel, right?
Yeah, well, it was like the secondary channel to HBO, but it would be like, it was kind of a skin flick, number one. It was a lot of nudity in that flick. Bad fighting, awful lines, right? I mean, it was a terrible movie that I'll end up watching again.
Exactly, as promised. That's it. We didn't have obviously Cinemax in this country, but there are a couple of different ones that carried those sorts of movies, and also, you know, obviously at weird times. And I always remember that there was a very healthy trade in, I assume these would be the similar sort of thing. You know, when there's like a, and this is like pre-YouTube and pre-people being able to kind of meme and share these things online, so that the audience was like necessarily very limited. Mm-hmm. Like those ones that where it's like Predator has come out, right? And they're like, right, make Predator, but like your budget is like $10,000 or whatever. And they'd be called shit like Code Red or like Command Decision or something like that. And although I realize actually now I said Command Decision, I think that was in my head because about 800 episodes of this podcast ago, I think I used the phrase Command Decision as a joke to open the podcast. Anyway, they always had names like that. Maybe it was actually a film and that was why it was in my head.
Could be.
I think actually Code Red was literally the Predator knockoff, potentially. That kind of rings.
I'm not gonna watch that shit.
It kind of rings a bell. But I watched some absolutely dreadful stuff and I was definitely gave myself some nightmares from it as well at that age.
Oh yeah.
Like
tons of them. Are you kidding me? I couldn't even number them. Thousands. Yeah. Thousands of bad fucking knockoff movies.
Well, there was a whole period of time where the good, because it was the good sci-fi, there was the good sci-fi channel, which was the, I guess, like the American and Canadian one. And they didn't syndicate everything to the UK sci-fi channel, which was maddening. Because I remember, like, do you remember when there was like the Battlestar Galactica reboot and it was actually very good?
Yeah, that was a good show.
And it just wasn't fucking shown over. It was shown in bits and pieces, but it wasn't shown in a place I could get to it. So do you remember... I remember mainly using this apart from this for watching The Simpsons, but do you remember Surf the Channel?
Mm-mm, no.
It was like a non-downloading, just like super lo-fi streaming thing where people just like smashed up a bunch of like mirror links and stuff to just like stream. Yeah, straight up stream to your browser, like random stuff, usually TV shows. Mm-hmm. And I obviously watched a bunch of like absolutely terrible films, potato quality on there, but also pretty much the whole of Battlestar Galactica, the new series at like 300 pixels wide or whatever. So there's loads of stuff that happened in that TV series where I got the audio, but I was like,
What?
Squinting at a laptop screen, like it's like this. Wow, look at this amazing space battle! I'm like, huh? What? What's going on?
Fuck! It's just flat. It's just a little flashing is all that's happening.
Yeah, I gotta go back and rewatch that shit at some point. Like,
I should go back and watch that. That was a good show, actually.
You must be able to just like buy the whole lot for like $5 or something now. You'd have thought, right?
Yeah,
it was a few. Yeah, I'm sure it was a few years ago, right?
I remember that. I remember that ending sucking though. Like it was getting canceled, and they just fucking they just chopped it off or something. It was some, I remember something with that. That was a good show though.
They ran out of steam. Yeah. I mean, I think the problem is that after season three and whenever it was, they won the Emmy. Mm-hmm. I think they just didn't know where to go from that. They're like, oh, we've broken outside of sci-fi and into this new area. And then, yeah. Oh, to be fair, was it season whichever was the series after the bit where they're stuck on the planet and they get occupied.
Oh, right.
The one after that, where they had the reprisals, that was brutal. That the beginning of that series was absolutely insane. That was some of the best sci-fi, I think.
Were they still on the planet?
No, when they got off the planet. Do you remember that bit?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's like the whole bunch of stuff where they're just like...